Good afternoon, everyone. For those who don't know me, my name's Ignatius. I'm on the Health Practice Committee, responsible for events in Sydney. So I'm just going to get a few community announcements out of the way first before I hand over to Louise today. Just a general call for speakers for these insight sessions. You know, they don't happen without volunteers. So, you know, we're always really looking for interesting and keen speakers. And then secondly, just a quick plug for a seminar that's happening in June. So the Future of Health seminar, it's our second seminar. We're really excited. We've got some great speakers lined up this year. An email came out last week, on Wednesday, with registration details. And there will be another email coming out next week. So please keep an eye out for that and register. We look forward to seeing you there. So I'm just going to do a quick introduction of Luis Augusto Canero. Probably pronounced that wrong. Apologies. So Luis is a Brazilian actuary. He's a fellow at the Brazilian Institute of Actuaries and an affiliate member of the Actuaries Institute. He has a PhD in actuarial studies from UNSW, which he completed in 2006. And after that, he returned to Brazil, where he has been working in actuarial consulting as an appointed actuary and as assistant professor at the University of Sao Paulo, teaching actuarial studies. In the last 6 years, he has led the IESS, which is a think tank in Brazilian health insurance. He is also an economist, holding a master's degree in economics. His more recent education includes executive courses at Harvard T.H. Chang School of Public Health. So quite a few academic achievements there. He now divides his time between Australia and Brazil. So, to talk about the challenges for private health insurance, Brazil and Australia, I invite Luis to start his presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Ganesh. Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for being here. Thank you for watching. I'm really excited to talk about health insurance in general. I have experience in many fields in actuary studies, like I've worked with life insurance, you know, in an insurance company or with superannuation in Brazil. But I find health insurance very exciting because it's quite complicated. It is difficult. It's very complex. And there is a lot of room for improvement, not only in Brazil, but anywhere in the world. So that's why I would like to share this presentation with you and also learn from your experience. So I prefer learning to teaching, right? So just to start, I'm going to start just explaining where I came from. In the last 6 years, I've been working with a think tank in Brazil. This think tank was founded by five large health insurers in Brazil. They have like probably 20% of the market share. And they were really concerned about, you know, people, the public knowing more about health insurance, how it works, why premiums, you know, are increasing so much, you know, what can be done to improve quality and at the same time having more affordability. So this is a challenge anywhere in the world. And we've been having a really good experience with a lot of research. We are very active with the media, now especially social media in Brazil. So we believe that in the last 10 years, the understanding of health insurance has improved a lot in Brazil, right? And this is a good thing. I don't want to spend a lot of time with this, but like our audience in Brazil is basically, you know, everyone. So like beneficiaries, businesses in Brazil, 80% of beneficiaries are in employer-based health insurance, you know, different from here. So it means large companies, also small businesses, they are the major clients of health insurance in Brazil. It's a very competitive market. Okay, there are almost 50 million clients, health insurance clients in Brazil beneficiaries, so it's a very competitive market. And well, I'd like to start with this, which is health systems. For many years in Brazil, I believe that insurers, they were not really worried about the whole health system, you know, the whole value chain. But, you know, because of the pressure, the cost pressure in recent years, and like they started asking questions, why are medical devices so expensive? Why are hospitals increasing their prices so much? Why are certain drugs becoming more expensive, and so on? So health insurers in Brazil, and I think all over the world, they are looking, they are developing a better understanding of the whole health system. So this is what I'd like to share with you. So health systems in the world. Health systems in the world, they all share the same characteristics, okay? And because of that, they share similar problems that we can tackle. So let's start with this. Like, this is a rank of health systems done by the Commonwealth Fund. It's a think tank, okay? In my presentation, you know, I make an effort to always give, you know, the source of the information, so you'll be able, if you want to know more about this rank and how it was done, you can look, you know, you can download, you know, the study and know how it was done. But what I want to say is, like, these are the characteristics what we would like health system to have. Of course, quality, access, efficiency, equity. We want people to be healthy, and we don't want it to be very expensive. So Australia is ranked 4. And if you look at, like, the US, the largest economy, and you look at the cost of health, I think you are familiar with this, but the US is the most expensive health system, and it doesn't deliver the best results. So the thing is, what can we learn from this experience, okay? And that's what I would like to approach today. And to start, so this is the structure of any health system in the world. So basically, we have here the payers, which are, like, in Brazil, they are basically the employers. We also have individuals who access healthcare through insurance. Like, this could be this for a public health system, it is the same. So instead of insurers, you have the government, okay? But it is the same. And then you have healthcare providers, the hospitals, medical centers, laboratories, healthcare professionals. And here we have the suppliers and producers of medical devices, pharmaceuticals, biologicals, and very important, it's important to know what happens at this part of the value chain distribution, okay? Because, like, at least in Brazil, in many countries, there are a few monopolies, and monopolies mean higher prices, right? So, as I said before, for many years, insurers in Brazil, they were not really interested to understand what was happening here, you know, with suppliers, distributors, healthcare providers. All they cared about was price health insurance correctly, okay, and pay claims. But there was a problem, like health insurance start to become more and more expensive in Brazil. It is the same in the US. And I know that in Australia you also face this challenge because premiums increase faster than disposable income. So it is the same. But before that, just to give you just the large picture about Brazil, a first major problem that we have in Brazil is that all payments in health insurance Healthcare providers in Brazil are paid mainly by fee-for-service, not like a DRG or any prospective payment method. It is basically fee-for-service. So fee-for-service gives the wrong incentives, okay, to have more waste, okay, to increase cost, to increase volume. And in Brazil, just to give you an idea, here we have the market share, here the number of insurers. Let's say health insurers have 20% of the market. Okay, if you go to 20 insurers, 40%, and the total here like about 1,000. So in Brazil, we have lots of health insurers, let's say health insurers or health funds, but most of them are very small, with like 20,000 beneficiaries, you know, and very concentrated in a few health insurers. And why is that? Because in Brazil, our, let's say, economic activity distribution is like this. So Brazil is, you know, the size of Australia, roughly the same size, but, you know, all maybe half of the economy comes from the southeast, especially São Paulo and Rio de Janeiro. So it explains why we have such a concentrated economy. And to give you also an idea that hospitals, now about the healthcare infrastructure, have a look at the distribution of hospitals. This is public hospitals, private hospitals. See, like we have much more private hospitals, right? And most of them concentrated on the southeast, which is this red area here. And an interesting thing is that in Brazil, we have a universal health system, which means a universal public health system, which means everyone is covered. But at the same time, if you see, there are more private hospitals than public hospitals. And usually private hospitals are for people with private health insurance. So it's not a very equal distribution. Okay. And now coming to our major problem in health insurance in Brazil, which is very high medical inflation. Since 2007, our institute, the IESS, the Health Insurance Institute, we hire a consulting firm, it's Willis Towers Watson, to calculate this medical inflation index for us. So our sponsors send all the data sets to Towers Watson, and they calculate this medical inflation index. In the last 5 years, the medical inflation has been very high, okay, very high, and much higher than general inflation. So imagine that most clients, health insurance clients in Brazil, are large employers or small businesses. And now health insurance is maybe the second highest expense after salaries. No, the second largest expense is health insurance for employees. And this is a big problem. That's why people started asking questions. Why is health insurance become so expensive in Brazil? And after some research, what we found out is that most of this medical inflation pressure comes from structural problems in the health system. So there is no solution in the short run, especially in Brazil, but there are a lot of things that we can do to fix, you know, some market failures. And I'm going to approach each of these problems, you know, through this presentation. So just comparing the Australian health system with the Brazilian health system. In Brazil, more than 50% of the healthcare expenditure is private, and we have a public universal health system, but more than 50% of the health expenditure is private, while in Australia it's almost 70% public, right? But in Brazil, you know, the healthcare expenditure per capita is less than $1,000. In Australia, $6,000. So Brazil is more comparable to South Africa, you know, in terms of health systems. But I would like to make this comparison here, basically because of the characteristics of health systems that, you know, we share, and how we can, you know, find the solutions to similar problems. Okay, so going to challenges and solutions. What are the challenges in healthcare systems? Medical inflation. So people asking, why is healthcare so expensive? And second, why does health costs rise? So why is the level of cost so high? And why, you know, the cost increases so much from one year to another? And the solutions go, some solutions are, for example, value-based incentives. I'm going to talk about payment methods, transparency, health technology assessment. I'm also going to talk about, you know, some products that we don't have in Brazil, but they were starting to implement those products, the high deductible health plans, and also using, or I'm going to explain what is value-based insurance design, something that started in the United States about 10 years ago, and also behavior change and empowerment. Well, but let's go and talk first about why is healthcare expensive? Well, it depends where you live, basically, right? There is like a very strong correlation between GDP per capita and health expenditure per capita. Okay, so we have an outlier here, which is the US, but here you see like this very strong correlation. So of course, like countries with more money, with more income per capita, they tend to spend more in health, okay? Because if people have more money, they are going to consume more healthcare. Healthcare costs also depends on the healthy status of the population. I remember there was a discussion a few weeks ago here, and someone asked the question, is our population, is someone 30 years old today healthier than someone 30 years old decades ago in Australia? Is our population healthier or not? So this is a comparison of the prevalence of diseases and conditions in Australia and Brazil. So in Brazil, we have more diabetes, but for some reason in Australia, there is more obesity, right, and asthma. And in Brazil, we have more hypertension. Probably we put a lot of salt when we cook barbecue. That's probably that, you know, rock salt, lots of salt. Okay. And we love sweets, so diabetes. Okay. So it depends. So we have to understand if our population is getting healthier. For sure, people are living longer, but we don't know if they're living better, right? It's something called morbidity compression, like people living longer, but then, you know, like most diseases and conditions are concentrated in a short period of time, and then you have more cost, okay? So this is probably what is happening. And then about Australia, you are familiar with this, which is the comparison between general inflation here and the increase in health insurance premiums. So this is on the news all the time, people asking, why is health insurance premiums rising so much? What can be done? And We are going to talk about that. So this is the problem. From 2015 to 2016, household disposable income rose by 3.3%. So see that I'm not using GDP per capita, because it's not like a better measure is household disposable income, and the increase in health insurance premiums, 5.6%. So if this happens year after year, we have a problem, right? And just to summarize what can increase cost in healthcare, like I have a list. So like this is actually the list of problems that we have to tackle. Many studies show that the first topic here, new health technologies. Many studies show that health technologies are the major drive for cost in healthcare over decades, right? We also have lots of evidence about payment methods and medical inflation. If you pay hospitals by fee-for-service or by DRG, it makes a huge difference. Population aging, and especially the speed of population aging. I'm going to show you that in Brazil, our population is aging faster, much faster than the Australian population. Information asymmetries. So it's desirable to have transparency on quality and safety. I'm going to explain why. It has a huge impact on healthcare costs. Of course, information about prices. Okay, let's say transparency on the price of medical devices and pharmaceuticals. Conflict of interest, especially healthcare providers. In Brazil, we don't know if you go see a doctor and the doctor says, oh, we have to do this diagnosis exam in this clinic. It's the only clinic. It's not covered by your private health insurance. It costs $2,000. You don't know if it is because like you really need to do this test, or if it is because the doctor has an arrangement with the clinic and is getting 30%. Okay, we don't know that. So in many countries, we have what called a transparency legislation. Like in the US, we're going to talk about the Physician Payment Sunshine Act. Non-competitive markets. So whenever we have a monopoly or lack of competition, you have higher costs. I know that this is also a problem in Australia. In many industries in Australia, there is some strong concentration. Healthcare providers, so let's say monopolies or market concentration, healthcare providers, distributors, producers, suppliers. And last but not least, a huge problem, which is fraud, abuse, and waste. Waste actually includes fraud and abuse. I'm going to also give you some information about all of these. So now I'm going to approach each of these problems, and so we can discuss what can be done. So when I was talking about structural problems, you know, like I had a look to see if it is also a problem in Australia, and I found this. Health insurance costs distorted by structural problems, right? And so if you have a look at this report, it is about the same I'm saying here. You know, we need to approach some structural problems to solve the medical inflation problem. And starting with healthcare technology, you know, there are few studies that show that new technologies increase cost in healthcare. And there is this cost paradox, which means usually in other areas, new technology makes things cheaper. You know, new computers are cheaper than older computers, but not in healthcare. Because usually, like you have x-rays, but then you bring MRIs, And we have both, right? There is no substitution. You have, and ours, new technology is more expensive, and people want to be treated with, you know, the newest technology. And sometimes there is no evidence that, you know, this new technology is better, it is effective. So if you have a look at this, this study written by Jonathan Skinner, it explains that in the US, most of the cost from healthcare technologies comes from new technologies, new treatments that are very expensive, and they have no proof of being efficient or effective. You know, there is no scientific basis to support the use of this new technology. I'll give you an example of that, you know. And this study by Kaiser Family Foundation, if you have a look, it explains how healthcare costs in the U.S. behaved, you know, in the last four decades, for example, and they explain that health technologies explain almost half of the increase in healthcare costs in the U.S. But then in Brazil, we ask this question, where is this medical inflation pressure coming from? Okay, we didn't know. We did some research in our institute, and we asked this question, why are health insurance become so expensive? Why is medical inflation so high in Brazil? And then we had a look at, you know, this is the structure of health insurance claims in Brazil. Data from our health insurance regulator. So this represents the whole industry. Okay, so these are claims for 50 million people, right? It's a good sample. It's basically the population. So half of the claims are with hospitalizations, hospitals. You know, I know that in the U.S. it would be like 40% or 35%. In Brazil, it's almost 50%. In some cases, in some health insurers, it's 60%, right? And then we asked the question, and we know that most of medical inflation comes from hospitalizations. It is the highest share of this cost, and it is hospitalizations also what's inflating more over time. And why? And then we had a look. We did. We have a working paper. We get a data set from a health insurer with 50,000 beneficiaries, and we had a look at, you know, their claims, at their hospital costs, you know, over time. So from 2007 to 2012, and see that in 2012. 58% of the hospitalization costs is with medical supplies and drugs, medical devices, right? So in Brazil, what is happening is that hospitals are making money with medical devices and pharmaceuticals. They are putting a very high margin on medical devices and drugs. And the following question is, why are hospitals in Brazil making money with drugs and medical devices? And the answer is because they can, because they like it, and because of fee-for-service, right? Because they usually get paid by fee-for-service, and they are able to put, because of that, they are able to put a huge margin on medical devices and drugs. They are not making money anymore with what is called hospital fees, which is the hospital service, right? Most of their revenue comes from medical devices and drugs. And the problem in Brazil is that, differently from South Africa, in South Africa, health insurers are more organized and united than hospitals. They were able to shift from fee-for-service to DRG. But in Brazil, it is very difficult. Hospitals are stronger than health insurers. In Brazil, there are like at least five different types of health insurers. They have different associations. They're not very united. So it's a big challenge to shift from fee-for-service to DRG in Brazil. Well, but talking about medical devices, I found this. This is like this is from last year, just a report talking about the price of pacemakers in Australia, almost $90,000 a pacemaker. So it was a case of a monopoly, right? And health insurers asking to the government to interfere, right? So it also has to do with like a fee for service, has to do with market power, things that we're going to talk about. So, and talking about medical devices in Brazil, few years ago, Bradesco, which is one of the largest health insurers, is one of our sponsors. Bradesco hired, actually was Deloitte in Brazil. This was done by Deloitte in Brazil. They got a huge data set of healthcare claims, and they were able to come with all this detail, the detail of the components of the price of medical devices. This is for knee prosthesis. The initial price is like 2,000 reals, and the price paid by health insurers is like 18,000. Why is that? Because like 53% of the final cost is with commissions to doctors. With commissions means bribes, the bribes. Doctors getting 30%, right? So distributors.
Is it on top of the fees that doctors charge, or included?
It is. It works. Like, I'll just repeat your question. It's on top of.
Doctor's
charge. Yeah, it's on top of doctor charges. It is like this. Actually, the distributor pays the doctor. Right. The distributor pays the doctor, so it is included in the distributor's price, right? Okay. And also, like this is the margin, the commission to the distributor, and this is the hospital margin. This is what I showed before, like hospitals making lots of money with medical devices, and this is possible because of fee for service, and also because of lack of transparency on prices. This is the price, an average price, but for a given medical device, you can have a price in São Paulo, right, which is like 5,000 for a stent, and then the same stent in a different city in Brazil, it's double the price. So there is no transparency. And talking about the impact of technology, like I'll give you an example from the U.S. Like 2 years ago, we had in Brazil a seminar, and one of the presenters was Professor Amitabh Chandra from Harvard, and he showed us this is one of his studies. Showing like this therapy, the proton beam therapy for cancer in the U.S. and how much money they spend, and the benefit is actually unknown. And in the U.S., Medicare reimburses $32,000 per treatment, and with that money you could cover 8 people, right? So it's a lot of money, and the problem is that there is no scientific evidence that shows that this treatment is appropriate for all types of cancer treatments. For some types of cancer, it is really good, but not for all of them. And at the same time, if you look at the number of accelerators, facilities for this type of therapy, has been increasing. So what it explains this is someone is making a lot of money with this, right? And in the US, they have a lot of fee-for-service. Okay. So we have, as actuaries, we cannot turn a blind eye on this, or like, and we need to know what's happening, you know, and why costs are increasing. And what is incredible, this is also from Professor Chandra, he explains, oh, people may think that spending more on healthcare will always improve quality and people you get happier. But he did a study and he compared the annual Medicare spending per beneficiary. So, and this is overall quality ranking. So this is the overall quality in this all states of the US. It is really impressive. The more they spend in healthcare, the lower the quality, right? So this is the proof that spending more doesn't always mean better quality. You have to be careful where the money is going and that we have the appropriate incentives. And another example of why healthcare is becoming so expensive. This was a promotion material, a flyer in the U.S. A large equipment, you know, international multinational company. This was how this company was approaching doctors, capitalize on imaging opportunities in urology, and not only that. And you can find this material. I gave you the source. They said, oh, if you do 1.8 procedures a day, you break even. And if you do 5 a day, this is your return on investment. If you do 10, this is your return on investment. So this is the way the industry, you know, can push doctors to produce more. And then there is this huge cost pressure, you know. This is possible because of fee-for-service, because we need to make sure doctors, they follow the called clinical guidelines, which means there are some rules in medicine that they have to follow guidelines. So what they do is what is best for the patient, right? And this is not the case. Like in this case, this doctor is going to make more exams like this to make more money. It's not necessarily best for the patients. Moving to another topic, which is population aging, which is another source of increase in healthcare cost. Here is just to show that, you know, like when we have populations, countries where the population age 65 and over, this is the relation between the population age 65 and over and healthcare cost among countries. So the older the population, the more the population spends with healthcare. But this is what is happening in Brazil. Our population, this is the population 60 and over, and we are basically here. The population in Brazil is growing old really fast. But at least in Brazil, our health insurance is priced by age brackets. We don't have community rating. But anyway, it is a problem because there is a law in Brazil that forces health insurers to have this. This is the last age bracket. It starts at 59. It's too early, you know. Like, and there is this huge shift here. So when people turn 59, you know, the the increasing premiums is really, really high. So, but the problem in Brazil is this one. there is a measure for the speed of population aging. And this measure is the number of years during which the population 65 and over goes from 7% of the population to 14% of the population. That happened in Australia. It finished in 2011. It started in 1938, so it took 73 years. In Brazil, it has only started in 2011, and it will finish in 2032, which means 21 years. So in a very short period of population, you'll be completely different. And if you look at other countries like here in Asia, Thailand is quite similar. Sri Lanka is quite similar, right? China, it's not too different. See, like 26 years. So this is a big challenge for many countries. So you have community rating here in Australia, but at least you have, you know, we have already passed this phase of population aging, right? And a few years ago, we had a seminar about population aging in 2012, and actually Australian professor John Pigott from UNSW was in Brazil to talk about Australia too. And at the time, like, we presented some projections that we did in our institute. So because, like, we have a very large data set, we have the claim frequencies per age for a sample of 1,000,000 and 500 beneficiaries. Okay, and because we have the claims frequencies, we have the hospitalization rates for the beneficiaries, we were able, using, of course, like the we use this, we had the information from the Brazilian Institute of Statistics, right? And the population projection. And then we, using claim frequencies, we are able to project the number of doctor visits, diagnosis exams and tests per age bracket. And the impressive result is, and we did that also for hospitalizations and therapies. And as we can see, for this age bracket, 59 and over, until 2030, let's say 13 years, the number of doctor visits, exams, therapies, and hospitalizations will double. We show this to hospital associations in Brazil. So, you know, there will be a huge demand for healthcare in Brazil in the next 15 years. Okay? With the hospital infrastructure that we have today in Brazil, we are not able to accommodate all those patients. So a lot of investment will be needed, right? And the question is, will people be able to afford health insurance to pay for this? You know, almost 60% of our health expenditure is privately financed, okay? So, of course, there will be a huge demand, but we are not sure about, you know, the financing side of it. And now moving to payment methods. We did some research comparing medical inflation. Like, we use different sources. You use like data from Thomas Watson, Ayan, Marsh. But for this study from Ayan, we had like the largest number of years. That's why I used the data from Ayan. And we compared medical inflation with the prevalence of fee-for-service. So here, payment method, mainly prospective. A prospective payment method is like DRG, okay? You know beforehand how much you're gonna pay per diagnosis. So for countries without DRG, you see Brazil here at the top. This is the medical inflation, right? And when you have countries with more DRG, more prospective payments, you have lower medical inflation. Okay, this is an original study done by our research team. And then, like a few years ago, 3 years ago, like our institute hired PwC to bring someone to show an international experience in DRG, and they contacted their team in South Africa. South Africa was the country that most recently introduced DRG in health insurance. They started, I think, in 2000, and the result was the reduction in medical inflation. So they were really, really successful. 2 years ago, I was in Johannesburg in South Africa for a conference. I had the chance to meet the CEO of a health insurer, and he explained to me how they did it. They started, you know, using their data set, and they calculated the cost of hospitalizations per diagnosis. And for 5 years, they started managing their clients. You know, for when you have a DRG, let's say for a pneumonia, and you know that the length of stay for a given DRG is like 5 days, and for some reason this hospital, the length of stay for this DRG in a certain hospital is like 8 days, something's wrong. So DRG gives you a measure of efficiency, right? And what they started doing, they started, you know, directing clients to the most efficient hospitals. So they did that for like 5 years, and after 5 years they started negotiating with hospitals, you know, prices based on DRG. In Brazil, we are still in the very beginning. Health insurers are still thinking of how they can approach hospitals and change from fee-for-service to DRG. Now talking about transparency, this is the legislation I was talking about, the Physician Payment Sunshine Act. It was introduced with Obamacare in the US. You can have a look at this website, which is like open payments, like, so you can check if your doctor is getting money from the medical devices industry or pharmaceutical industry. And some guys, you know, came with something more easier for consumers, which is a website called Dollars for Docs. So they got, you know, they put everything together. It's very easy. You go and has your doctor received drug or device company money? Okay, and put his name here, and okay. For example, Andrew Jones, Boston, and then you have how much he got from the industry. Okay, so at least you know. So this is very important to have. We are working, I was working with policymakers in Brazil to try to introduce this in Brazil. And why is this so important? Transparency on quality and safety, right? Because this conflict of interest here has an impact on quality. Of course, if people in Brazil 2 years ago, there was a big scandal, a big scheme about doctors make money on medical devices for spine surgery. They make huge amount of money. And the problem is, like, we don't have this type of transparency, and we don't have transparency on quality, on the result, okay, on the outcomes. And I would like to show this. In the US, at least they have this quantification. Medical errors are the third leading cause of death. And in 2000, you know, the Institute, the American Institute of Medicine, came up with this book, To Err Is Human, when they say that the total national cost, lost income, lost household production, disability, and healthcare costs of preventable adverse events, medical errors resulting in injury, are estimated to be between $17 billion and $29 billion, of which healthcare costs represent over one half. So most of the increase in healthcare costs comes from medical errors, a waste, right, or fraud or abuse. And this problem, medical errors, they are more prevalent when we don't have much transparency. That's why in the last 15 years, 16 years in the U.S., they made a huge effort to improve transparency on the quality and safety. And I'm going to give you some examples. This is the example for the NHS, for the U.K. So in the U.K., you can go to the NHS website and check some some quality and safety indicators for hospitals. Okay, the same for the American Medicare, right? You have this. This was a result of that book. With that book, To Err Is Human, they set up an agenda for improvement. So this is one of the results. In the private sector in the U.S., large employers, okay, large buyers of health insurance, they came up with an institution called the Leapfrog Group. So, which is like also they have a website where you can also check quality and safety indicators for hospitals in the U.S. Okay. And here in Australia, you also have some transparency. In Brazil, we don't have. And last year, we did a study with a university in Brazil, and we estimated, you know, the number of deaths due to medical errors in Brazil. And the result was that medical errors in Brazil are the leading cause of death, more than cancer, you know, cardiac disease, more than crime, more than violence, right? And the problem is like the injury, the harm, the deaths, but also the cost. There is a lot of waste because of adverse events. If there was a complication in a hospitalization, the person, for example, is supposed to be hospitalized for 5 days, but due to a complication, length of stay is 30 days. Who pays the bill? Even if the person survives, right? This is a total waste. In fee-for-service, the health insurer pays the bill. With DRG, the hospital, you know, pays for this cost. And when I talk about waste, you can have a look at this publication talking about the amount of waste in the healthcare system. So something between 21% of total spending and 34% is waste. This is about like $500 billion a year. It's a huge amount. And they come with this, the types of waste: failures of healthcare delivery, failure of care coordination, overtreatment, administrative complexity, pricing failures, fraud and abuse, and so on. I remember I've worked for the health insurance regulator in Brazil many years ago, and we spent, I went to Washington, D.C. for 2 weeks. At the time, like the Brazilian government had an agreement with the American government to train Brazilian officials in regulation, right? And we had the chance to visit the Department of Health in the U.S., and we had a meeting with the directors, and one of the guys introduced himself as an FBI person, and we asked, why is the FBI here? And actually, the FBI has a permanent unit, a department, right, in the health department in the U.S. because of fraud. So usually, like the cost of fraud in the U.S. is like $80 billion a year. And that's because they have the FBI trying to catch, you know, criminals. But it's a huge amount of money, right? And last but not least, a discussion about value-based insurance design and high deductibles health plans. Let me start with a high deductible health plan. I don't know if you're familiar with this, but probably like 10 years, 15 years ago, high deductible health plans were introduced in the U.S., especially in the employer-based products. It works like this. You have, for example, a high deductible, like $2,000 a year, but your monthly premium is like $80, right? And then, you know, the price is much lower, and which is good, but at the same time, you need to have more information about, because like if you are supposed to shop around for doctors and hospitals up to the deductible limit, okay, you need more information. So that's why in the U.S. they develop, you know, transparency solutions to make it possible for consumers to shop around. And this had a huge impact on costs, on the employer's cost. It was a good thing. And this is something that we are trying to introduce in Brazil. Last year, our institute had a seminar to talk about high deductible health plans in Brazil. So we invited people, an actuary from Switzerland, and also people from the U.S., a human resource director of a large company in the U.S., Genentech, okay, and she explained how high deductible health plan worked in the U.S. It was like something that, you know, helped reduce the cost, you know, and also also improve efficiency. She gave an example. For example, in the U.S., MRIs, they cost between $500 and $3,000. So if you have health insurance and you don't have to pay for MRIs, there is no deductible, why are you going to the $500 MRI instead of the $3,000? So there is no incentive. So with high deductible health plans, there is an incentive for consumers to shop around, you know, to look for the best choice. But there is some sophistication. This sophistication is what is called value-based health insurance. The thing is, many studies show that, you know, different risk types in health insurance behave differently to co-payments and deductibles. I mean, let's say that you have a 30% co-payment for emergencies, right? Poor people, you behave differently. The elderly, you behave differently. Okay, claim the impact on claim frequency, you be different, right? So this is one thing. The other thing is that not all procedures are cost effective. Even preventive procedures, right? So, value-based design is a way of health insurers setting the deductible and co-payment structure based on the cost effectiveness of each treatment. So for those treatments which are cost effective, probably you don't need to have a very high co-payment, or even this procedure should not be included in the deductible, right? In the US, in the Obamacare plans, there is a list of preventive services for which you don't have, they cannot be included in the annual deductible, right? But for procedures and treatments which are not cost effective, right, you could have higher deductibles or co-payments. So it value-based insurance design brings like a more logical and sophisticated structure way to design health insurance and to promote like consumer empowerment, right? Better choices, lower costs, and better results, right? Well, let me see if I think this is what I have to talk about. And now we have time for questions and discussions. So I finished 5 minutes before the time. So it is good. You have more time for questions and discussion.
Yeah, any questions from the room? I think there's a roaming mic. Do we have questions from the web? No? Jamie?
Thanks for your presentation. I've got about 100 questions, but I'll limit myself. The organisation you represent, am I right in thinking it's just... it's not representing insurers or any particular stakeholders. It's just, you know, an honest broker for information. And I mean, that idea really interested me. Can you talk a bit more about, you know, what actuaries might bring to that space in health insurance?
Okay. Our institute is a not-for-profit private think tank. Okay, supported by large health insurers. We don't represent the industry, so like we don't do any lobbying. So like we develop research and content, technical content, and we give it for free to the industry. So publications, seminars, books, right? Data sets. We have a data set platform on our website where people can research it, can access. We give money to research, actually, in Brazil. We have an annual prize for the best publications in Brazil in healthcare. So it's basically, you know, giving information to the industry and for free. We don't, even in our events, our seminars, we don't charge for registrations, right? So it's money well spent, I believe. At the end of your question, you asked like, what is the opportunity for actuaries? Yeah, in Brazil or in our institute? Yeah, I think at least in Brazil, there is a huge opportunity for actuaries. A few years ago, when I was teaching at the University of São Paulo, I used to invite a headhunter to talk to my students. So they could know in which areas of insurance they would find better jobs. And this headhunter was saying, oh, there is like a huge demand for health actuaries in Brazil because of health insurance, health costs. And it is quite difficult to find health actuaries in Brazil. So there are like huge opportunities.
Yeah. I might ask a question as well. On, you had a slide, I think it's slide 28, which had a breakdown of the costs by the type of costs, essentially. You had GP hospitalizations and so on. In Australia, we can't insure for GP visits, for example. And one of the things that we are trying to do better here is coordination of care. So I wondered if in Brazil, you know, what's the Brazilian experience in terms of getting better coordination? more customer-centered patient care?
Yeah, in Brazil, we have still a challenge, which is we lack patient privacy legislation, right? So in Brazil, like bank information is very well protected. Nobody is worried about, you know, the bank information being leaked. But for health, we don't have this legislation. That's why we don't have have done a good job with electronic medical records for coordinating health. You need something like that, right, first, so you can coordinate. So a few weeks ago, I met with some people in Brazil. There was an association of IT companies.
Okay.
And we are working on a proposal, okay, legislation proposal. So like we hope that in a few years we're going to have this type of legislation enacted in Brazil. So answering your question, health coordination in Brazil is done maybe at the health insurance level, okay. Right?
Yep.
Okay, so each health insurer has its own platform for healthcare coordination. It's not generalized.
How does that actually work? Like, what's the what does the interaction look like with the with the insurance member?
Health insurers they are of course focusing in some types of clients of policyholders. For example, we know that if you take the top 5% of beneficiaries in terms of expenditure, you know, they spend 50%. So 50% of the claims comes from 5% of the people, right? So usually, because like cost, healthcare coordination is expensive, right? Health insurers are focusing on people who spend more, this 5%, okay? We have an example of a health insurer, SulAmerica, who works with Healthways, which is an American company, also has also an office in Sydney, coordinating healthcare for people with chronic disease for this important group, but not for everyone. We don't see health insurers in Brazil doing a good job in healthcare coordination for the whole portfolio of clients, because it is still expensive.
You mentioned your think tank works with the industry. What engagement do you have with consumers? I think one of the things from Australia is that this is us in the industry on these sorts of issues, but consumers don't understand. What do you do differently in Brazil to make sure consumers understand?
Yes, I think not the good thing. What we have different in Brazil is that, you know, most beneficiaries, they are employer-based contracts, policies. So it makes our job easier to explain how health insurance works to HR people, you know, and they will talk to their to the employees. But of course, like we also have this challenge to make people in general understand, have a better understanding on health insurance. And what we do, like our experience, like we have lots of working papers, you know, like we know that people in general, they don't go to the website and download working papers. What we do, like we have a blog on our website. This is like a very successful experience. We have a blog. And we have a agency, a communication agency that works with us. So in the blog, there is like a post. In the post, there is a very short text explaining something. Let's say medical inflation, where does it come from? And then there is a graph, very simple. And if people want, they can click on the link and go to the full report or study. So we do that every day, like 6 posts every day. So in very small amounts, you know, of information every day, we keep, you know, providing knowledge to the public in general, but it's not easy. And also, like, we have experience giving talks to judges in Brazil, because they have to deal with lots of legal people suing health insurers, and they need to understand how health insurance works. We usually have seminars with judges. We have a book on legislation and that kind of thing. As I explained, like, our target audience is quite diverse, right? Okay.
Thanks for the presentation. Really, really enjoyed it, actually. I guess what I'm asking about is, you mentioned, laid out a couple of different ways to reduce the costs and reduce the inflation long term, like the DRGs and the waste reducage. How much of an impact do you think they would have if you could implement all of those on reducing the excess long-term inflation?
That's a good question, but I think, like, let's, I don't remember in which slide I had that table, but I believe, like, let's say we have 18% inflation in Brazil, right? I believe we could cut that by half if we had DRG. You know, we would be something, like we are here, 18%. I think we could be like at least like Mexico, 9%, right? So in Brazil, like, we have the ingredients for the perfect storm, which is the fee-for-service, lack of transparency, quality, and safety. Also, we don't have good legislation saying that, you know, fraud and abuse are crimes. So it's difficult to punish corruption. And what else? Also, like, legislation on patient privacy, right? And added to that, some local monopolies. In some parts of Brazil, in some states, you're going to have just one distributor who can sell a specific stent or a specific drug, right? And prices are very, very high. So with, like, at least with fee-for-service, I think, like, most of these problems would be solved. So I would start, like, to solve all these problems, I would start with changing the payment method first, okay?
Yeah, I was looking at that as well and wondered if, so that the countries on the bottom of that table, would they be almost 100% prospective, or are there other factors? I mean, I guess you alluded to that in your answer. It's not clear, like, from France through to Denmark, whether you're talking about 55% that's prospective up to, you know, maybe 90% prospective, whether there is actually that positive correlation.
Yeah, I need to have a look. This study is quite recent.
Yeah.
It hasn't been published yet, you know, but yeah. But probably here we're going to have, like, at the bottom, we're going to have almost 100%. Mm.
Any other questions?
With your discussion about value-based insurance, is that academic, or are people actually implementing that? And what's your hope for what that might be?
It is not academic. It is already happening. There is, you can Google, there is an academic called Mark Fendrick, who's working with that. There is Association for Institute for Value-Based Insurance Design, but health insurers in the U.S., they already using this. What they do, they hire some health technology assessment firms to do cost effectiveness analysis to decide about the inclusion of a new treatment on coverage, okay, as a differential on coverage, Okay, so it is also important because when you have competition. So let's say you are a health insurer and you want to, you know, give more to your clients, but how do you decide, okay, if it's worth it? Okay, so you do some study, and of course it helps you. The cost effectiveness analysis assessment helps you decide about including this new treatment, and also decided if you're gonna put a co-payment or deductible or not. Okay, so for each treatment you do this analysis.
And what's take up been like? Take up rate. Of these new value-based...
Sorry?
What's the take-up rate? Have they been... has there been a high take-up rate? Have they been popular?
It is become more popular among employers in the U.S., right? We did a survey in Brazil with employers. They also won this. Right? Most of them, they won this. So I think this is... You'll be like a... Actually, last year we had this seminar and we invited the health insurance regulator in Brazil and we said, oh, you need to change your regulations to make this type of product possible. And they have changed the regulation. So they make possible for co-payments and deductibles to be in different levels. You know, like you don't need to have like what was called a blunt co-payment, like 30% for all treatments. You know, each treatment can have a different co-payment.
Can you say a little bit more about premium rates by age? So I think you said that the age bands are regulated, so it has to be 59 plus altogether. And is that, you know, the 6 times child rate regulated as well?
Yeah, it is regulated. It is regulated, which means like if the price for people age 0 to 18 is P, and for people age 59 and over, it can be up to 6 plus P.
So
and, and of course, there is a subsidy among the age brackets. And also, like, yeah, there is some regulation about the... about like the change, you know, like the accumulated increase between this first age bracket and the seventh one, okay, and the seventh one and the tenth, they are like 10 age brackets. So it's a bit more complicated, but you know.
So you can set P to be whatever you want, but then everything else falls in.
Yes, you can. Interesting. Like premiums in Brazil, they're not regulated. Like the price, the selling price is not regulated. Only the annual increase in individual health insurance is regulated for the individual market. Okay, because the regulator understands that individuals do not necessarily have enough bargain power. Okay, and so for the employer-based insurance, there is no regulation on price. Of course, all of them, they have to sell policies with this price structure, you know, per age bracket. And the age brackets are the same for all health insurers. Okay, so all health insurance policies in Brazil have the same price structure. So it's more comparable, right? But the big problem is that, you know, like because a legislation in Brazil, a law that protects the elderly, you know, like the premium increases are not allowed for the elderly. In Brazil, the official date for someone become an elderly person is 60 years old, quite young, you know. But anyway, that's why the last bracket here starts at 59. 59 is not elderly, so, okay. But this is a problem. Before health insurance regulation started 17 years ago, health insurance policies, they had premium increases at age 65, 70, 80, 85, okay, it was some more gradual. I think this is not fair, because like when you turn 55 in Brazil, there is a huge premium increase. You're going to pay the same as a person aged 90. And you don't know if you're going to survive until you are 90 years old, right? So.
I think we might be running out of time. We could keep talking.
I could ask just one.
Oh, one more question? Yeah. Okay.
If nothing is changed and the inflation you're seeing at the moment continues, how long do you think until you start seeing large chunks of the population pull out of the system due to unaffordability? Or is it already happening?
Yeah, good question. Two years ago, we had 50 million people in the health insurance market. 50 million policyholders. Now we have 48, because like Brazil has been facing a recession in the last 2 years. So 2 million people left the health insurance market. So this is an example of what can happen, you know, if things get worse. So we believe that if costs keep rising so much and disposable income doesn't rise as much, we're going to have a decrease in the number of policyholders. Okay, so only people with lots of money to afford individual health insurance, or large companies who need to provide their employees with health insurance in Brazil, you'll be in the health insurance market. So our market may shrink. At the same time, that healthcare demand will rise. Okay, in the next 15 years, there will be an incredible rise in healthcare demand in Brazil.
So the 2 million that's dropped out, that's primarily the individual market, not the group market then?
No, also the employer-based market, because like when people who lost their jobs, they also lost their health insurance. All right.
Okay, we might end it there. This has been fascinating.
Yeah, and if you have questions in the future, just email me. I'll be happy to answer your questions. Thank you. Thank you.